Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. And it's Wednesday when we usually talk about the week in sports with Bill Littlefield, host of NPR's Only a Game. But this week, we're going to talk about the last 20 years, because today Only a Game is celebrating its 20th birthday as NPR's signature and only sports program.
And with us to mark the occasion is Bill Littlefield. Bill, welcome and well done.
Thank you very much.
You
I appreciate it.
You don't look a day over 15, let me say. 20 years is quite an accomplishment, whether it's 20 years of marriage or 20 years of Only a Game. So congratulations.
You're almost 32 years of marriage. So I'm even prouder of that.
So the show's still got a ways to go. Yeah.
Well, listeners, we want to hear from you. Every week, Meghna and I get to talk to Bill. Now it's your turn as Bill marks 20 years of Only a Game. What's your question for him about the world of sports? He's covered the big stories from the Red Sox heartbreaking World Series defeat in 1986 to the small ones, like the success of the Bentley College women's basketball team. What's your question, your favorite moment from the past 20 years of Only a Game? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter and at Radio Boston. And Bill, let's go right back to the beginning.
Oh, this is a scary idea.
20 years ago today, you kicked off the show talking about the local boys of summer. Let's listen.
This is Only a Game, and I'm Bill Littlefield. This week's free advice, worth precisely what it costs, don't worry about the Red Sox. History suggests that there's no reason to worry until our guys get to about four games on top and look down. For now, enjoy the ride. And if you can't do that and need a diversion, look around. The spooky, happy truth, the blessing and the curse of this time of year is that nobody's on a break. If there is ever a time to say that sports is too much with us, late and soon, a line I wish I'd thought to steal and pervert before Roger Angel did, that time is now.
Sports is too much with us late and soon. Is that still the case?
Well, I think it's more the case than it ever has been. We just got the news this week that the Red Sox had decided to pay their second baseman $100 million.
Mm. Good second baseman, though.
And Anthony, we can still laugh. So it's all right. Yes, he's a fine second baseman.
Well, Bill, there's so much I want to actually talk to you about, and let's definitely talk about the Red Sox. We're going to play some tape from some great moments in 20 years of Only a Game. But take us back 20 years and tell us a bit of a story about how Only a Game came to be. I remember when you first started doing commentaries for NPR way back when, because guess who was your editor?
I was your editor. Couldn't have had a better editor than I had back in 1984. and I still remember one of the first, I think it was the first piece that the news director here at Only a Game, at WBUR, sent down to NPR to you at Morning Edition. And it was about Al Nipper and Tom Seaver. Tom Seaver, the veteran major league pitcher, and Al Nipper, then a very young major league pitcher who had idolized Seaver when
he was
a kid, sneaking into ball games in St. Louis. And he got to pitch against his idol, Tom Seaver. And I went and did a story where I talked to both Nipper and Seaver. They sent the story down to you. And about a month after I had done the story, you said, hey, we'd like to run that on Morning Edition. And I said, but that story's a month old. And you said, so what? It's a good story.
I think we said.
And then I knew that I'd found the right place to work.
Back in the day, I think our motto was, we'd rather be good than first.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I want to play some great moments. So we wanted to revisit some of your favorite stories from the past couple of decades. And when we asked your production team what the highlight from the past two decades was, they said, Candlepin.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so here's a bit from your piece you did about Candlepin Bowling, which is a bit of a send-up of Ken Burns' lengthy documentary, Baseball. Let's listen.
It is, of course, the sport of all the people. Fly on an airplane or hang glide, if you like, and when you look down, you'll see that long, low roof and that red neon pin on top. Or out front, or over to the side there somewhere. And, you know, there may be a big hamburger next to it, too, but it will still be a bowling alley, and it will be full of bowlers.
Hey, I paid last time.
You paid for the alley, I paid for the shoes.
So I have to pay for the shoes? What, two pairs?
What, do you want to share the shoes?
Oh, you could wear one, I could wear the other one.
Don't bowl like my brother.
Don't bowl like my brother.
That's fantastic. So, of
you
course, click and collect.
First voice?
Bob Edwards, right?
I don't know how we convinced him to be part of that.
Who thought of that piece? Fantastic.
Oh, I think it was a group effort, and I think that was the point at which we knew we had a good group.
It really is. Bill, you wrote a thoughtful piece in the Boston Globe last weekend about how your appreciation of sports has changed or evolved over the years. You wrote that as a kid growing up in New Jersey, you rooted for Willie Mays, the New York Giants. After you moved up to Boston in 1972, you learned how to root for the Red Sox, but that allegiance to one team changed and you became a different kind of sports fan.
Well, I think what happened when I finally began working in sports was I got to know some of the people who were wearing the uniforms, and it was much harder to root for a team and much more natural to root for some of the individuals who I found to be fascinating people. In particular, I remember speaking with Dwight Gooden back in the 90s when he was making this long, decades-long addiction that he had been fighting. And he was making a comeback, and he was trying to pitch, and he told me being able to come to the ballpark every day is a blessing. Every day is a blessing. And I spoke again to him very recently, just a couple of months ago, and I still root for him. You know, he's trying to get his life together. He's trying to stay sober and straight, and these things suddenly, you realize they're much more important than ERAs and batting averages.
You know, it occurred to me, and I think I actually sort of felt this intuitively the first time I edited a piece of yours, whatever, 20-whatever years ago it was, and I don't think I ever really thought of you as a sports journalist. I thought of you as a storyteller who chose to hang his story within the context of games, but I mean, do we have that right?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think the attraction of sports, as far as I've been concerned for all these years, is that it's such a magnificent place to find stories. Mm. And many of those stories are shortchanged and turned into cliches, because cliches often are, you know, quite prominent in sports. But a lot of the stories are good enough, so they shouldn't be turned into cliches. They should be allowed to breathe, and they should be allowed their entire, you know, three-dimensional reality. And that's been pretty much the shorthand version of what we've been trying to do.
Hmm. In that piece in the Boston Globe, you wrote about 1975, when the Red Sox almost beat the Cincinnati Reds in the World Series, and you say that was your most passionate year of Red Sox fandom. Before you changed a little bit, what happened that year in particular that made you so passionate?
Well, one thing that happened was Louis Tiant.
Mm.
And
Louis Tiant, great Red Sox pitcher from Cuba.
One
right?
of the easiest people to root for ever, partly because he was so entertaining as a performer, but also because he had come back. He'd been a great fastball pitcher as a young man with the Indians, and then he reached the point where he lost 20 games in a single season with the Indians. The Indians gave up on him. The Red Sox gave him another shot. And he was in the process during the years of developing this strange windup, which involved, as somebody once said, if you bought a ticket to a Red Sox game, at some point during the game, Louis Tiant would look you in the eye, right? Because he turned in so many different directions while he was pitching that he would catch your eye as well as everybody else's in the park.
Well, I happened to be at Fenway Park last night, and up on the big jumbo screen, suddenly there was Louis Tiant today smiling at everybody. He was back in town, back saying hello to the Fenway faithful. It was a nice moment.
Oh, there have been a zillion great Tiant stories out of that team. But the other thing that was interesting about that team was they never should have been where they were. They didn't really, if you looked at them position by position, they didn't belong on the same field with those Cincinnati Reds, half of whom are now in the Hall of Fame. And yet they took them to the seventh game of the World Series. They did it with flair. They did it in a very entertaining way. And the fact that they didn't ultimately win simply put them in the same category as almost all the rest of us all the time.
Mm. Then in 1986, you're covering the next big opportunity for the Red Sox, the 1986 World Series with the New York Mets. We all know what happened there. A heartbreaking loss in Game 6. They went on to lose Game 7. And you suddenly realized, NPR had put you on this story, right? And you suddenly realized that you started rooting for the story rather than the team.
My assignment was I was supposed to do a commentary the morning after the final game, no matter who won, no matter which game turned out to be the final game. And I realized as I was walking away from the ballpark after Game 5, which the Red Sox had won to go up 3-2, that it would be a great story if the Red Sox won because they hadn't won the World Series in, you know, decades, anybody's lifetime, all the rest of it. But it would be an even better story if they found a more macabre way than ever to lose because that was so, you know, so emblematic of the team. And I realized, wow, you know, if I have to talk about this, I'm really rooting about the better story to talk about. And I don't exactly take responsibility for what happened as a result, although I was standing on the steps of the dugout at the beginning of that season when Bill Buckner ran up the steps of the dugout onto the field, and I heard him say under his breath, "I'd rather be lucky than good."
Oh, boy. Listeners, we're talking to Bill Littlefield, host, of course, of NPR's Only a Game. Only a Game is 20 years old today, so we thought we'd take this very special opportunity to talk about sports with Bill. What's your favorite sports story that you've heard Bill talk about? What's your favorite sports story? How have you seen sports change in these last 20 years? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. I'm here with Bill Littlefield. Let's go to Michelle, who's calling from Ipswich. Hi, Michelle. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Very well. Good to have you. What's on your mind?
I have two comments for Bill. First of all, I used to listen to your show while I was nursing my son, who is on rebroadcast at like 3 o'clock in the morning. And it was great, and I couldn't stop listening. You know, he'd go back to sleep, but I'd stay up and listen. And I remember one of the great stories you did was, I think it was a professor from BU talking about the concussions on the football players, mm-hmm. that no one else was talking about that story. And that was the first place I ever heard of anything about that. And then the other thing I wanted to tell you was, I was convinced that you had done a voiceover for a Ben Gay commercial on TV, and I emailed Only a Game from the BUR website. I was like, is that you? It sounds just like you. And you emailed me right away with, sadly, no.
Yeah, because they make a lot of money doing those voiceovers.
I know. I was hoping it was you. But anyway, I'm a passing, you know, sports fan, but you make it interesting, and I love the human face that you put on it. And I like hearing about the Louis Tiant and, you know, so many of the sports stories are about, like, the Greek gods, the pantheon of our professional athletes. Mm-hmm. But I like the way you do it.
Thank you. I really very much appreciate your call. Thank you very much.
Michelle, thanks so much for your call. And Bill, this reminds me of wanting to move on a little bit to some of the famous characters from the world of sports that you've covered. And one character who I know has always had a special place in your heart is Bill Lee, spaceman, former Boston Red Sox pitcher. And we have a little bit of tape from Bill Lee. You set this up. He played for a team called the Boston Gray Sox, right?
He built a team called the Gray Sox, and they were a traveling team, and they played against whoever would take the field with them. And Bernie Carbo played with them for a while, and Jim Lonborg pitched for him for a little while, at least one game down in Falmouth, where it was the first field piece that we ever did for Only a Game. Bill Lee's Gray Sox against the Falmouth Commodores.
All right, well, let's listen to Bill Lee here. Here we go.
When you're finished with this game, I want you all to run back to your houses. And on the way, find 2 5-pound rocks. Because when I come up in the morning, after I stretch, I grab rocks, and I go down and get the mail, and I go like this. And I go like this all the time. What does that do? It builds my upper body.
I love that. I'm not sure too many professional ball players are building their upper body by picking up random rocks.
Or collecting their own mail.
But seriously, he was a character. There are not a lot of Bill Lees around anymore, are there?
No, there aren't a lot of Bill Lees around, and the one and only Bill Lee was in fact banished by the Red Sox essentially for being Bill Lee rather than because he couldn't do the Red Sox any good as a pitcher because he had a fine year with the Montreal Expos right after the Red Sox got rid of him. Bill is a very funny and original character. I've done some panels with him. I've talked to him from time to time. We used him as an analyst on Only a Game very briefly until we realized that nobody had any idea what he was talking about. but I'm very fond of Bill and always have been.
Let's take another call. Beth is calling from Exeter, New Hampshire. Hi, Beth. You're on the air with Bill Littlefield.
Thank you both so much. I so enjoyed your description of seeing your work as being a storyteller, within the context of games. I feel like that helps me understand why I'm always so excited to tune in on Saturdays at 7 a.m. And hear what stories you have to tell us this week. And I guess my questions were in that context, which sport or sports for you reveal the most about personal character, and is there a particular game that you think is the best metaphor for life?
That's a great question. If we had days and perhaps a semester to mull it, it would be great. It's not so much individual particular games that I find especially productive or fertile for stories. It's the individuals, and I've found individuals playing shuffleboard. I did a story some years ago about the residents of a retirement home going to a racetrack, a thoroughbred racetrack, for the day, and sitting and having lunch and betting on the horses, and got some of the best stories I've ever heard from guys who were in their 80s who'd gone to the track with their dads 60, 70 years before in New York, and could talk about it with extraordinary clarity. So, it's not so much the particular games. Baseball is very nice because there's so much time. You sit in the stands, and there's a lot of time between pitches and when managers change pitchers and things like that to talk to the person next to you, sitting next to you about, well, doesn't that shortstop remind you a little bit of Louis Aparicio, that sort of thing. But these games all involve people, and people all have stories. And if you're patient, you get to hear some good ones.
You know, the periphery of these big sports stories often, I mean, I think what you're saying is that they often produce some great stories in their own right. And you and I encountered a great story down in spring training many, many years ago. We were covering the Detroit Tigers. The year after they had won the World Series, you can probably dredge up the date better than I can. But the story we encountered were these snowbirds, these folks who had come down living in their Airstream trailers right outside of the stadium.
Parked in the blacktop parking lot, yeah. It absolutely miserable, heat banging down on them, and they're sitting under their little awnings having lemonade and waiting for the next Tigers game. And they'd all come down from Michigan.
Understandable.
And they'd all come down from Flint and Ann Arbor, yep, and all these places. And this was how they spent their vacations. You know, Anthony, one of my memories of that particular day was the fellow who could recite the entire lineup of the Tigers from the 1934 season. But another memory is we were coming out of a game that day. We'd watched a game. And I was exhausted, and I just wanted to go back to the hotel and maybe take a dip in the pool and take a nap. And you said, no, but look at all these people parked in the trailers in the parking lot. We got to go see what that's all about. And you taught me something very important, which is don't ever go home too early because you're going to miss a story if you do.
You might miss that home run in the bottom of the ninth inning.
Well, or you might miss that fellow who can recite the entire lineup of the 1934 Tigers.
That's right. Well, let's go to Ruth, who's calling from Acton. Hi, Ruth. You're on the air.
Hello, how are you guys doing?
Well, thank you.
Good. Well, I'm calling because I teach writing and storytelling, and I have for many years, and I don't know the first thing about sports. I don't know what kind of ball you use for what kind of a game. But when 15 years ago, I turned on the radio one morning, and I heard a man talking about a sports event in rhyme, I almost fell out of my bed. And I sat up and I listened. And it wasn't what you were saying about the team. It wasn't only what you were saying about sports. It was what you were saying about the heart of the person you were speaking about. And all your emotion came through in your rhyme. And I want you to know that I go out of my way to listen for you any day, any station, because I feel like you are talking about not only sports, but you're talking about the most human part of the people who play any game. And I thank you so much for what you've given me.
Well thanks, Ruth. Mom. I appreciate it.
Ruth, thank you very much for that call. I know your sentiments are shared by all kinds of folks who listen out there. Bill, I want to ask you about we mentioned in the introduction, some of the big stories, but some of these small stories that you've really paid attention to because they are such good stories. The Bentley College women's basketball team, coached by Barbara Stevens.
Barbara Stevens. And to me, that's not a small story. I mean, Barbara's been there for a couple of decades or more. She has a winning percentage of about 800. I have gone to numbers of practices. She doesn't raise her voice. She generally doesn't even have a whistle. She just quietly teaches people something about being good teammates, about being unselfish, and about being very straightforward with the press as well. In the article that you referred to in the Globe magazine, when I was writing it, I remembered a conversation I had with one of Barbara's star players some years ago, and I thought I was being very clever. Mm. And I said to this young woman, who's a very good basketball player, I said, "Do you consider yourself a basketball player who's going to college, or do you consider yourself a college student who's playing some basketball?" Aha.
Aha.
I had her, right?
Yeah.
And she looked at me and smiled and she said, "Is that a trick question?" So she had me. And that's the kind of player that comes out of the Bentley program. No cliches, smart, intelligent, confident, and extremely accomplished on the basketball court and, more important, well beyond.
Listeners, a little bit of a treat today. We're spending some time with Bill Littlefield, host of NPR's Only a Game, which is celebrating its 20th birthday today. If you've got questions for Bill, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. A lot more listeners on the line, Bill. So let's go to Kevin, who's calling from Randolph. Hi, Kevin. You're on the air.
Hello, gentlemen. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
I've been to the show for years, and you had a great piece at the Globe on Sunday.
Thank you. That. Thanks very much, Kevin.
I have a question for you. I've been a sports fan for years, and I'm wondering if you think that I'd call it the art of being a fan has been diminished over the years by the fact that players no longer play an entire career for a team. I watched Larry Bird, John Havlicek, Bill Russell play their entire careers, and other people watched Carl Yastrzemski and Ted Williams and Mickey Mantle.
Mm-hmm.
And that reality is long gone, and I think it's taken something from the game. It has for me. We just watched Paul Pierce be traded from Boston after he almost made it an entire career on one team. It would have been
right, close.
But I just wonder how you feel about that reality now and how it affects the value of being a fan anymore.
I think it has changed the experience of being a fan. There's no question about that. And you're right. You don't very often get a chance to follow a player who has the opportunity to be on the same team for his or her entire career. But, you know, people shouldn't be restricted by crazy laws like the law that used to hold players to one team in the major leagues, the reserve clause. Free agency is a good idea because freedom is a good idea, whether you're talking about millionaires or people working at Walmart. So, you know, I'm in favor of free agency, even though, as you, I think, quite correctly suggest, it changes the experience of being a fan.
Kevin, thanks so much for that call. Bill, Megan MC writes on Facebook. She asks, over the past 20 years, what change in sports has surprised you, worried, or inspired you?
The most recent, I think, inspirational change is the acceptance within sports, or at least the greater acceptance within sports, of gay athletes. That we've gotten dramatic evidence of that, of course, very recently. The other thing that I think I've been most encouraged by is the growth and success of women's sports. Now, I know people are going to say, what do you mean? The Women's Soccer League has failed twice and is now in somewhat less glorious circumstances than before, trying to succeed again. But if you look at the number of women who now go to college to play sports, if you look at the percentage of women who play sports in high school, all these statistics suggest that we take girls and women much, much more seriously as athletes, and many, many more girls and women enjoy playing sports than ever was the case before.
Bill, I want to ask you a little bit more about women's soccer. And first, I want to play a piece of tape, which is really entertaining. And this comes from a piece, I guess, an experience you had with the Boston Breakers back in 2003 when they were apparently looking for a stadium announcer. And we've dug up some tape from your audition for that job.
Boys and girls and ladies and men, it's time to bring you once again the flying feet of Christine Lilly and Kate Sobrero, sometimes silly, sometimes not, and Monica, too, 8 inches taller than 5'2", Heather Aldama, and Tracy as well. The length of her goal kicks, none can tell, but seriously, folks, your 2003 Boston Breakers
All right. So how'd that work out for you?
You know, it was funny. We decided we would do a story based on my trying out as the PA announcer for the Boston Breakers. And I explained to them from the start, I don't want to be the PA. I mean, I do want to be the PA announcer, but I can't because it would be a terrible conflict of interest if we ever want to do a story on the team. But we want to do a story in my trying out. And I thought they understood. And after the initial tryout, they called me up and they said, we have some news for you. And I said, what's that? Well, you made the cut. They wanted me to come back. And I said, no, you don't understand.
That's fantastic.
But
were they
going to
require...
I had more fun with that than you can imagine.
I was going to say, were they expecting a new verse every week or every game?
I'm not sure it was the verse. I think it was working every player's name into that. You know, that was the fun of it. And the players got a kick out of it, so I did too.
A couple more calls. Let's go to Constantine, who's calling from Brighton. Hi, Constantine. You're on the air. Are you there, Constantine?
I had the pleasure to work briefly at Only a Game many, many years ago.
And I remember it well.
Yep. When I tell people this around town, they always say, so what's he like? And I always say, he is every bit as nice as he sounds on the air. So,
thank you.
Take that, young man.
I appreciate it.
You've covered everything from extreme ironing to to, God, I can't even think of what else. What's the silliest sport you've ever covered, or a few of them?
Well, one of them was underwater rugby, and I got soaked, and it was winter, and I had to go out into the parking lot soaking wet. That wasn't so good. Foursquare was kind of strange because they made me wear a funny hat when I played. I think the aforementioned extreme ironing, although I didn't actually cover that because people iron on places like Mount Everest, and I was not up to being on the spot for that story. But you're right. We've had some great ones.
So here are just a few. In addition to baseball, football, boxing, you have covered some of the lesser-known sports. Here are a few. Competitive stone skipping.
That was very recent. Yes.
Competitive karaoke. Mm-hmm. Best in show for gerbils, mm-hmm. right? Freestyle mm-hmm. snowmobiling, trampoline dodgeball.
Are you suggesting that these are silly?
Sorry. No, not at all. Just all not right. mainstream, perhaps. then there's dartball. And then there's this, competitive cup stacking. And this is some of your interview with the third fastest adult female cup stacker.
In order right now, we have a 3, a 6, and a 3. And in order to do the cycle, you have to start off by doing the 3-6-3. That's the first part of the cycle. So you're just going to put one hand over the other and stack these up very slowly using both hands.
And when you're finished, you've got a pyramid of three.
A pyramid of three, a pyramid of six, and a pyramid of three.
So there's the third fastest adult female cup stacker. Why couldn't she get the fastest?
You know, she had a bad day. What can I tell you? The cups kept slipping off the table. She was delightful.
That's terrific. Let's go to Andy, who's calling from Brighton. Hi, Andy. You're on the air with Bill Littlefield.
Hey, Bill. It's really nice to talk to you.
It's nice to talk to you, Andy.
Thank you. I'm one of those, I think, rare Boston males who could care less about professional sports. I like going to games and I'll watch a good game, but I don't track stats, and I really, you know, to me it's professional entertainment. But when I listen to you, you make it so fun and so enjoyable, and I can hear you smiling when you're doing your podcast. And the interactions that you have with Charlie Pierce, I think, are hysterical.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that, and I'll pass that on to Charlie.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for everything you've done.
Okay, you're welcome. Thanks,
Andy,
for calling.
Andy, thank you for that call. Another character who you wrote about on Sunday, the Curry College men's basketball team coach Malcolm Wynn.
Yeah, I got to know Malcolm when he coached the team at Roxbury Community College. And quite often, as I said, as I mentioned in that article, he was working with kids who were the first people in their family to go to college, and who had lots of problems in their families, and some of them had flunked out of Division I schools where they'd been recruited even though they had not achieved the academic background to go. He was magnificent. He not only won a lot of basketball games, he got the year that I spent following that team, he got every single one of those kids hooked up with a four-year college after they were finished at Roxbury Community College. And he cared about every one of them, and he still follows them, and they still meet with him. And just a good coach and a caring man. And so I root for him. I'd root for him wherever he coached.
Well, that's a nice example of some of these great people that show up when only a game. R. Baker asks on Twitter, why, and here's a final question, Bill, because we have about a minute left, but R. Baker asks on Twitter, why are sports so important in our society?
I think they provide us with drama, and they provide us with simplicity, or at least the illusion of simplicity. You've got foul lines. The ball is either fair or foul. You've got a basket. The ball either goes in or it bounces off the rim. You've got a guy throwing a pass, and somebody either catches it or drops it. There's so much that's confusing and ambiguous and unfinished in our lives, and sports gives us the illusion of something clear and easy to understand. It isn't always clear and easy to understand, but the illusion is important.
And Bill, finally, we have a tweet here from Snow Gray. Ask Bill to do a story on baseball fashion. Bring back those colorful high socks. What do you think?
I'm going to make a note right now.
Okay.
We'll see what we can do.
Well, Bill Littlefield, of course, is host of NPR's Only a Game. The program is celebrating its 20th birthday today. And Bill Littlefield, congratulations. Thank you for all your great programs. And it's always great having you on Radio Boston every week. So we wish you all the best in 20 more great years at least.
Anthony, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, that's Bill Littlefield, host of NPR's Only a Game. You can continue the conversation on Facebook at Radio Boston or at radioboston.org. A lot more ahead on the program, including the lost art of finding your way. Meghna goes out into the woods, gets lost, but manages to find her way back to our studios. Stick with us. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.